Hi, this is Dennis, the background admin business guy type personal and undisclosed. So our sponsor this week is The Great Courses. The Great Courses are just that, great, in part because their sponsorship funds our investigative efforts. Listen in for Robbie and I talking about The Great Courses later in the show, and enjoy.
Hi, and welcome to a new bonus episode of Undisclosed. This week's episode is Truth and Justice. Now, if you've been paying attention, we made a pretty incredible announcement a few weeks ago. The Emmy Award-winning actor John Cryer will be joining our podcast. That got a tremendous reaction from our listeners, mostly really excited and some just a little confused. What is John Cryer's connection to Undisclosed? Well, the connection comes from someone whose name you should all be very familiar with, Bob Ruff, producer and host of the Truth and Justice podcast. After spending a considerable amount of time investigating Adnan's case, Bob began investigating other wrongful convictions. He's taken his audience on a wild ride in his new season, and really an emotional ride as he unravels not one but two cases simultaneously. So today we begin by hearing all about them and finding out about what John Cryer has to do with all of this. But first, here's our executive producer Dennis Robinson with a word about this week's sponsor.
Who's our sponsor this week, Dennis?
It is The Great Courses. I'm super excited, mostly because I'm just a Great Courses fan. I listen to The Great Courses on my way to work every day. But this week, I'm super excited because we get to promote a Great Courses course that you watched and you loved.
Yes, it's called The Everyday Gourmet, Rediscovering the Lost Art of Cooking. First of all, let me just explain that I am a member of Great Courses Plus, which means I get like unlimited videos, access to like 7,000 videos, a million different topics. It's great. But this course is, this is the thing. First of all, let me ask you, Dennis, do you cook?
Well, no, but,
no,
but.
Renaissance man.
I'm trying to, but well, I'll tell you why. I started watching these videos, right? And they're great. The instructions wonderful. And I'm sure you could talk more about that. But what it led me to believe is that I eat crap and I spend too much time eating crap. And that if I just get back to the basics of cooking decent food, you can do it quick and it's easy and it's better for you. So these videos have inspired me to get back into the kitchen.
Amen to all of everything you said. I'll say this, the thing about these videos, first of all, this particular course is taught by Professor Bill Briwa and he's fantastic. Like in a 30-35 minute class,
yes.
You will. And the thing is there's this course actually has 24 videos. So it's 24 different videos from like how to handle knives to how to all the way to, you know, frying, you know, broiling, baking.
He just got into it, didn't he? And it's in part because of it's brought to us by the Culinary Institute of America. I mean, they just cover everything.
It's really beautifully produced. The quality is great. But what I find amazing is within 30 to 40 minutes, he'll give you like three or four recipes and techniques. So it's like mm-hmm. You can take those techniques and use them in so many different ways. Now, you don't cook, but I have been cooking for at least 20 years. And I mean cooking for family. And I'll tell you this, even as somebody who's been cooking for a long time, first of all, I want my listeners to know I've lost 45 pounds in the last year. Okay. But I've done that by eating mostly like protein and salads and soups. And so the first courses I took from this one, I watched the videos on eggs, salads, and soups because that's like what I live on. And I actually love the stuff. And I was really excited because there are ingredients he uses that I'm afraid to use, even though I've been cooking for 20 years. Yeah. Like, for example, in the salad course, there's a Vietnamese salad roll. I have never in my life been able to figure out how to use rice paper. And now I know. And as soon as Ramadan is over, because I'm starving right now, mm-hmm. but as soon as it's over.
This is bad. This is bad for you, right?
It's
talking
bad for me.
About the delicious food that you're going to cook.
Yeah. But you know, Dennis, you've been to my house a couple times. You know I can cook.
I've eaten your food. You can't just, I wouldn't say you're a cook. I'd say you borderline are a master. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I'll take the title of master chef. But I will say, I do have a limited rotation. It's like the same 8 or 10 dishes I make over and over. So I'm learning, I've got a whole roster of things I'm going to make when Ramadan is over. I'm going to tweet them out. I'm going to take pictures. I want our listeners to take pictures. Things that even you've been cooking forever, you don't realize. And I'll give you an example. I did not know that to keep lettuce crisp, you should put it in ice water. I thought when you put lettuce in water, it makes it wilt. So, see?
Wow. I am amazed. Lettuce crisping techniques brought to you by Rabia Chaudhry and the Disclosed podcast.
So anyway, I am excited to be able to try out a bunch of things. I'm going to try out their Vietnamese soup and using ingredients I don't even know how to pronounce. But I really encourage our listeners to check this course out, check out the many other courses they have. And the great thing is, if you're an undisclosed listener, what do they get?
Oh, they get a free trial today. All they have to do is go to www.thegreatcoursesplus.com/undisclosed. That's very, very important in order to get that free trial that you go to that URL. One more time, it's www.thegreatcoursesplus.com/undisclosed. When they sign up, they'll immediately get a free month of unlimited access to all of the lectures.
And I look forward to seeing you tweet pictures of food at me while I'm starving in this month of Ramadan.
Don't put that on me. Let's put that back in the listeners. Listeners, listen, go get The Great Courses Plus, Rediscovering the Lost Art of Cooking. Go cook something beautiful, tweet it at us, and we'll retweet your pics. All right, let's go ahead and hear your conversation with Bob Ruff and John Cryer.
All right. So, Bob, you know, you began Truth and Justice podcast by kind of covering Adnan's case. I think you began by, you were listening to Serial, then you started listening to Undisclosed, and you did a deep dive, and you've been really connected to us with the case. You know, I share the case files with you. We're always communicating. And I don't know if listeners have, if they haven't listened to kind of like your first season and they're interested in Adnan's case, it's kind of like a must listen. But I do really want you to talk about the other cases that you've picked up since then.
Yeah. Once I moved on from the Adnan case, and when I say moved on, I've moved on in the same way that you guys have moved on. I mean, it's still being worked on and thought about and things behind the scenes. But as far as what's happening on the show, the second case that I took was a case involving a former professional boxer out of Smith County, Texas. His niece had emailed me and told me that she believed that her uncle had been wrongfully convicted. His name is Kenny Snow. They called him Kenny the Blizzard Snow when he was in his boxing days. So I started with his case. And when I started working his case, I started getting all these messages from people and from Kenny himself telling me that this problem in Smith County, Texas is not unique to him, that there's been literally books written about the corruption in Smith County, Texas in the DA's office. And so his case has brought me into and has led into two cases that I'm actively working right now. One that I consider my primary case, and I guess you would call season two at the moment, the case of Edward Ates. The other one would be Carrie Max Cook, who a lot of people, if they're anywhere on social media lately, has seen as he was wrongfully convicted back in 1977 and took an Alford plea about 20 years later. And for the last 20 years has been fighting to get an actual innocence exoneration. And he actually had a hearing last week. I was down in Texas for that. So one thing has led to the other. It started with, in Kenny Snow's case, one of the reasons he ended up in the position that he is in now is because he alleges that the prosecutor's office forced him to testify against this Edward Ates guy. And he says it was false testimony. They offered him, you know, in exchange for, instead of his 99-year sentence that he was facing, that he could have that reduced down to a 10-year adjudicated probation if he would give this false testimony against Edward Ates. He actually suggested, it's a pretty neat story, that I get a hold of Edward Ates and look at his case, because he told me that he's always felt terrible about doing this. This happened in 1998 is when Edward Ates was convicted. And so that led me to Edward Ates' case. And that's the case that we're really launching into, actively investigating right now. And actually, as of last week, we actually got the Innocence Project of Texas to take on Ed's case, and he has a lawyer now, and they're preparing to litigate his case.
That's pretty amazing. I mean, I've been following this, and I thought Kenny Snow's story was amazing, and then when you started following Edward Ates, I mean, that was like another level of crazy. John, are you have you been following the cases?
Yes, and it is remarkable that what appears to have been the corruption in Kenny Snow's case clearly is endemic to what's been going on in Smith County for years.
So So you have three people here right now. I mean, they're like, kind of like three stories that are going on at the same time. You have Kenny Snow, Edward Ates, and then Carrie Max Cook. And I think, I don't remember when you started, but at some point you started tweeting out a lot Carrie Max's book. Is that how people refer to him, Carrie Max, or just Carrie?
Carrie Cook, is Max is his middle name.
Okay, Carrie. So yeah, he wrote a book, right? And that was a book that you shared a lot. And what was it? Well, can you tell our listeners what the name of that book was and why you were sharing it so heavily?
Sure. Carrie's book is called Chasing Justice. And again, this kind of came from Kenny Snow when I first started investigating Kenny Snow's case, which was back in August of last year. So this is while I was still covering Anand's case. I was doing my preemptive investigation into the Kenny Snow case. And Kenny, in one of the first letters that he wrote me from prison, he said, you need to get this book, Chasing Justice by Carrie Max Cook. And then you'll see this is documented misconduct in the Smith County DA's office. You need to read that book so you can understand that this story that I'm about to tell you, this insane story, is reasonable and it's something that actually happens there. And so I actually started tweeting out and telling my listeners on the show that as a prerequisite reading, I would suggest they all get that book. And this was back last fall before I even started reporting on Smith County. I didn't tell anybody why, but I told them you need to get a hold of this book and read it. And it is a tragic story, but it's Carrie Cook's. It's his story about how he was arrested, how he was persecuted for being an accused homosexual, and all of the corruption and everything that happened that led to his arrest, how he was treated in jail, the misconduct and the lies that were told about him at trial. It goes through his conviction when he went to death row. I mean, it's a pretty gruesome book, but it lets us know about the reality of what these wrongful convictions do to these real people. I mean, Carrie spent, remember, he was convicted based on the premise that he was a homosexual. And this is Texas in the late 70s. So that's actually a crime then. And so imagine how he was treated when he got into the death row, because he was sentenced to death. And so Carrie's story is pretty incredible. It's been documented by many legal scholars as the worst case of prosecutorial and police misconduct in American history. He was actually convicted and sentenced to death twice. He was tried three times, and the fourth time he was 30 minutes away from his fourth trial when he was finally offered the Alford plea. And at one point, when one of his convictions were thrown out, he was 11 days away from execution.
Yeah, it's kind of a Kafka-esque nightmare because for the last few years, he's been fighting just for people to admit, just for Smith County to admit that he was innocent in the first place. You know, that's all he's asking for right now. But of course, in the last week, he's been pushing for making sure that there is some sort of reckoning in the Smith County court for the people that did this to him.
You know, I think people don't realize how hard the state fights back in these situations. And to the reasonable, rational person, you think, okay, look, there's a lot of overwhelming evidence here. You guys messed up. Just say. And a lot of times the people who are in charge, you know, at any given time are not the people who are involved in the case from 20 years ago. And it's hard to figure out why there is such a commitment to keeping a conviction or keeping a narrative. And part of my theory is that, you know what, they're doing it on the tax paradigm, right? You've got a defendant who's got to keep paying out of pocket legal bills, but the state doesn't have to do that. They have the resources. We're paying their salaries. They want to drag it out for decades. They can do it because they're not paying out of their pocket. But I want to, because we didn't mention these three defendants, like what are their convictions for? It's not all for murder, right? Can you explain that a little bit, Bob?
Sure. So Carrie Max Cooks was convicted of the rape, murder, and body mutilation of a woman named Linda Jo Edwards. And this was, again, in 1977. Kenny Snow, his convictions were two robberies. And one of the robberies, the offender went into a tire store with a can of mace, sprayed the shop owner in the face with mace, and stole, I believe it was about $160 out of his pocket. Later that night, there was another similar robbery, almost identical, at another tire store. And this individual, actually, it wasn't a tire store. The other one was a used car dealership. But sprayed in the face with mace, a fight ensued in that one. And this is another situation that a lot of us are familiar with now of what I believe to be a false confession, where he was coerced, he was railroaded by the police. And through the evidence we found over these past several months, I believe we can prove that he was absolutely railroaded and he was innocent of this crime.
But Kenny only actually confessed to one of them, right?
Right. He only confessed to the simple robbery. he never would agree to confess to the what they call the aggravated robbery in Texas, which was the second one. And that's the one that carries a 99-year sentence maximum.
99 years for stealing what? A couple hundred bucks.
Yeah, about $2,000.
Oh, $2,000. Okay. That's
But even still. So my season two really isn't Kenny Snower, Kerry Max Cook, or Edward Eates. My season two is all about Smith County.
Smith County case. Yeah.
You know, there's an old Forensic Files episode where the Kevin Urich of Smith County, whose name is David Dobbs, the prosecutor there, he appears in one, and it's way back in like season one, episode seven. But it's a Smith County case that Dobbs prosecuted. And it's a story of a very, very wealthy white man who they proved in a premeditated plot murdered his mother for the insurance money, threw her from the second floor over a balcony on the stairs, and was convicted. It was premeditated and was sentenced to 35 years in prison. And Kenny Snow was convicted of these two crimes. And actually, he was given a probation, but then they revoked his probation and sentenced him to 40 years for these two robberies. So you've got the difference between the two is the rich white guy and the poor black guy.
And Bill Cole, who was the victim of the first robbery, actually shot his wife and received a 3-year sentence for shooting his wife.
Yes, for attempted murder.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's the thing. This story is insane. I mean, it just goes in all these different directions. So one of the things that I've done through the podcast is I went down to Texas and I tracked down the victim because things didn't look right in the police report. And so this one victim, Bill Cole, he has proven to me, and you listen to the show and hear all the details about it, that the entire police report, the entire narrative of the state was complete BS. And there's a big reveal there. I guess I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah, don't spoil it, because when I heard it, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. And so as you're investigating Kenny Snow, he leads you to Edward Eates. So let's talk about Eates for a bit.
Okay. So Kenny, who in order to get his deal of deferred adjudication probation, which again was later revoked, instead of his 99-year sentence, he had came to me and told me that this David Dobbs and an FBI agent by the name of Dennis Murphy came to him in the jail, in the Smith County jail, and approached him and told him that they could make a deal with him. They could get him out of there so we can keep boxing. But he needed to get something on this Edward Eates guy. Edward Eates was accused of murdering his next door neighbor, or lived one house away, a woman named Elnora Griffin. Her body was found in her single wide trailer, completely nude, badly beaten across her whole body, and her throat was slit. That's the crime that Ed was accused and then later convicted of. Well, he had this crime happened in 93. He had his first trial in 96. There was a hung jury in his first trial, and then he was out. And while he was out, he went to trucking school. He got a good job. He got married, had a child. And in 1998, during his second trial, his wife was then 5 months pregnant with their second child, and Ed was convicted. And one of the reasons he was convicted, really the only thing difference between the two trials, besides some shifting, changing testimonies, was this testimony of Kenny Snow, who testified that Ed had asked him to lie about a statement from another suspect. And what actually had happened was someone else in the jail had told Ed that they were there that night. Kenny Snow heard it, and Ed asked him to testify for him, and the prosecutors had him flip that around and say that it was him asking him to lie. But so then Ed was convicted in 1998 and really hasn't had any help since then. He went through an appeal and there was no luck there. He tried some habeas work, but you know, one of the things, and you'd mentioned earlier about this all being on the taxpayer's dime, that I think a lot of people aren't aware of is the fact that after the appeals process, once you get to the habeas phase of your case, you do not have the right to an attorney anymore. The state will not appoint you an attorney.
So now you're at the point with the AIDS case that you have managed to get the Innocence Project to take his case on, right?
That's correct, yes.
That's amazing. There's so much to unpack in these cases. I want our listeners to like go and listen to the podcast, because I also don't want to give away too much, but this is kind of like the structural stuff. I kind of want to take a step back and figure out, number one, how you got here, Bob, from a career in being a fire chief and a firefighter. And John Cryer, why are you here?
Yes, why is Ducky? Why is 80s film icon Ducky commenting on Undisclosed at all?
My entire, this is what this was all about. Undisclosed, I mean, the end game was to have John Cryer join us. And it worked. So let's start with John and say, John, I want to know how you got here. How do you know Bob? How did this all happen?
This all happened because I, like a lot of people, was acquainted with Serial and felt that it had a lot of questions left unanswered. A friend of mine said, well, you know, there's a companion podcast called Undisclosed. And I started listening to that. And I was immediately so impressed with the level of depth that you researched and went into things. And I thought, you know, I have very limited experience in the criminal justice system, thankfully. But I've always felt that, you know, we've done a huge disservice in the entertainment industry to the criminal justice system by portraying it in these ridiculous ways. We failed to take in huge amounts of bureaucratic error because the criminal justice system is, like any bureaucracy, a flawed animal. You know, it's run by humans, so it's going to be flawed. And listening to your podcast, listening to Undisclosed, I just thought these are the kind of facts that just get lost in a trial context. And so I thought, well, what's wonderful about a podcast is you're not hampered by having to keep things short. You can go into however deep you need to go. And then I found Truth and Justice and thought, oh my gosh, this guy's going even deeper into these things. And so I started communicating with Bob because I had my own crackpot theories about things.
Oh, you did?
So, yes. They were mostly just trying to explore Jay's confession to its real depth in terms of it never making one effing iota of sense, because it never made sense to me that at one point Anon would say, okay, you know what? Hey, I'm going to kill Hay tomorrow, but here's my car so that you can go get that gift for your girlfriend, because I know that means a lot to you.
Well, it sounds silly when you say it like that, John.
Okay, you're right. It sounds silly. It sounds like probably not a good murder plan.
Right.
And obviously, Bob and I got to talking, and I admired the depth to which he would investigate these things, and the fact that he intended to investigate a lot more cases after he was finished with Anon's. You know, so he and I have been communicating about trying to find a way to expand the reach of Truth and Justice, and we have some plans that I'm not at liberty to talk about just yet. But I've taken just a huge interest in the criminal justice system as a whole, but the effect of making these things public through a podcast specifically.
So basically what you're saying is you're here to atone for Hollywood and for the film industry for
CSI and Law and Order. And well, no, I love law enforcement, by the way. I love cops. I've had nothing but good experiences with cops. It's only, like I said, any huge bureaucratic organization is going to have people who are really good at their jobs and smart people, but also people who aren't and people who do this for the wrong reason. And when people's lives are at stake because of this system, it's truly terrifying. And so I feel like you guys are part of the solution.
I mean, both of us, John and I, have both, although we don't have direct experience with the criminal justice system, we have had some experience with the legal system, and we know firsthand the constraints and how people can get away with things and how things are not always as they seem. And people who have not had a firsthand encounter don't get it. They do not understand that it's just a matter of just going to court and telling the truth and everybody wins. That's not how things work at all. But I also wanted to explain to folks then how John got to Undisclosed. So let me talk a little bit about that, and then I want to explore Bob, how he got here and what he's got planned for the future. And like Bob, we're going into a new season. You know, we say season, but really it's a new case. It's a new life. It's a new wrongfully convicted defendant. I believe he's wrongfully convicted. In fact, just last weekend, Susan Collin and I spent time in a small town in the South. I'm not going to say where, but meeting with family and friends and witnesses. And, you know, it's heartbreaking because it's a couple of decades of this guy's life. He was a kid at the time. And his family, they're still broken. You can feel it. And the desperation of the father, like, you know, I'll do just anything. Because we're like this little ray of hope now, which is also kind of scary. But as we were contemplating how to do season two, we're like, you know what? We're pretty much doing weekly episodes anyways. But we do want an addenda. We want to kind of have a separate show or whatever that talks about the case in a way that we don't talk about because we're so in the weeds. And we thought, who could host that? Because we don't want to host it as lawyers. We want somebody with an outside perspective. And Susan goes, you know, John Cryer follows us and he's, you know, got a relationship with Bob. Maybe John will. After like 50 emails back and forth, we're like, all right, Robbie, go ask John. And you said yes. And it's
well,
been.
But it was accompanied by a very charming graphic that Susan put together that was a little heart that was curled around with what looked like pubic hair, I have to say. I don't know. I thought that was an odd choice, but I found it charming in its way.
You know, furry pubic hair hearts are what we're really good at in underclothes.
Kind of take a look at the graphic again. You may want
to. I have to revisit it. And now you're going to have to share it because you can't just put that out there.
No. You're right. I will tweet it. But it was a sweet request. It was that I be your Chris Hardwick, because Chris Hardwick hosts The Talking Dead, which is the Walking Dead fan show. And I am honored to be asked and happy to do it because, as I said, I'm an avid listener and fan.
Well, we're really excited. And thank you so much. And now there's Bob, who, like you said, you guys have some amazing future plans. But I want to talk about why Bob is no longer a fire chief and what is he trying to do? What are you trying to do in Smith County? Are you bringing about a revolution, and where are you going to go after here?
Well, it's a long story as to how I got here, and I'll get into that in a second and try to make it not so long of a story. But the reason that I'm doing what I'm doing right now and what I'm doing in Smith County is for a lot of the same reasons that you and John just mentioned as to why you're doing it. It's the fact that through this process, through this journey over the last year and a half that I've been doing this show, I've realized, number one, how flawed the criminal justice system is. But in doing so, especially investigating these cases, especially in Smith County, because these are like my cases, right? So they're not, you know, before I was, you know, working the same cases alongside with you and the serial case. But, you know, I had to start from scratch with these cases. And in doing so, you know, I've traveled down to Texas, I think 6 times now, and I've met all the witnesses and the victims, and, you know, and I've talked to, you know, Kenny and Ed and Carrie almost every day. And it's made me realize how much of a personal thing this is. You know, it humanized it for me. And not that I didn't know that, but, you know, I know the numbers and I know the research and I know the statistics. But when in Edward Ates is the most amazing transformation for me, you know, I write him this letter and I'm like, hey, I've been working on Kenny Snow's case. He told me I should get in touch with you. I'd like to know more about your case. Maybe I can help. And I got a letter back from him like, I don't know who the hell you are, whatever. You can look at it, because his case was dead in the water in Texas. In Texas, you get one bite at the apple with habeas. He had already taken his and he's done, unless you can present new and compelling evidence to reopen. So he'd given up. As a matter of fact, he had told his wife about 2 years ago that she needs to file for divorce, that he's never coming home and she needs to move on. He doesn't want her to be alone. I mean, he's just an awesome, just super great guy. And I've got he interviews a few times on the show, like hour long interviews, and you can just see what a great guy he is. And so it starts to make this bond, this friendship with him and with Kenny and with Carrie. And then as I go further, I track down Ed's mother, who he hadn't heard from in a few years, and kind of reconnected them. And just recently, within the last couple of weeks, Ed had been telling me that he didn't know if he was married anymore. Like, he told his wife that, and they live quite a ways away from where he's in prison. So, you know, she'll bring his kids to visit him maybe like once a year. That's pretty much all he sees him. And he didn't know if they were still married anymore. He said he just never asked. He assumed that they were divorced. Well, I finally tracked down his wife a couple of weeks ago. And it's just, this whole thing has been such an emotional roller coaster for me. You know, I get her on the phone and I tell her what I'm doing, and she starts to talk to me. And then I told her that, you know, Ed doesn't know if you're still married or not. And this sweet woman just, she's bawling her eyes out and praising God and telling me that she did file the papers, but she never went to the courthouse. She couldn't bring herself to do it, and that they're still married and she's still single and she still loves Ed. And she just knew he was going to come home someday. You know, I've gotten to know his daughter, again, his mother. And so the work we're doing is to obviously work towards exoneration and getting these men out of prison. And I keep saying we, and it's not the royal we. You know, the concept behind my show is it's a crowdsourced investigation. You know, the hashtag on Twitter, everybody calls themselves, and I do too, the Truth and Justice Army, because my listeners are actively involved in what we're doing, and their resources and whatever I need, they're going to help, whether it's, you know, to analyze a photograph or to translate for a witness for me who doesn't speak English. But the work that we're doing, we're seeing that this ripple effect, it's changing lives. You know, Kenny Snow's case is a lot more difficult because Kenny confessed and he pled guilty, which means there's no investigation. There's no trial transcripts to pick through. There's no discovery. There's none of the things you typically are looking for. And it's not an impossible case because there's a severe case of prosecutorial misconduct on his part. and an actual innocence ground, because the victim, who now says that now that he's seen a picture of him, that wasn't him. That's not the person who robbed him. But for him, what's happened is all of his family thought that he was guilty and he hasn't seen him for years. His son, who he hadn't seen since he was 7 years old, and he's 25 now, came to visit him, and then came back with his daughter and all of his grandkids to visit him in prison. And he's reconnected with his sister in Ohio. And it's so there's this ripple effect that's going out throughout the world, and it's touching a lot of people and it's changing lives. And that's why I left the fire department. It's not that that wasn't happening there, but, you know, I devoted 16 years of my life to the fire service. You know, I was worked all the way through the ranks to where the last 3 years I worked, I was the fire chief. And I loved my work. But what I had found was that when I became the chief, that I wasn't seeing the effects of my work as much anymore, because, you know, the chief is it's almost a political position. You know, I was wearing a white polyester suit every day and sitting behind a desk and arguing with politicians and going to meetings. And, you know, I wasn't kicking doors down and dragging people out of fires anymore.
Yeah. Right. People, when they listen to Serial, they're like, oh, that's an amazing story. And the truth is, all of these stories are really incredible. I mean, Kenny, Edward, Carrie's, these are all amazing stories that, like, just human interest stories that are just so devastating. And I'm thinking, well, if only there was, like, a Hollywood producer who could turn these amazing stories into like, other
nothing.
Kinds of media.
I don't know who could do that. Yeah.
No, wouldn't that be amazing?
I don't, that would be great. Yeah. I got nothing.
You got nothing. You know, I was being a little bit facetious when I said, you know, you're here to atone. But there has been, like, a real shift, I think, in the tone of media coverage and on criminal justice. Because I think before it used to be, like, whether it was Dateline or a lot of the or movies or whatever shows, it was a lot of it was about how there are cops. And, of course, there are great cops, great detectives doing good work. But how they always get it right, how they figure it out, how they nail the right guy. I remember growing up watching Dateline and 60 Minutes and 2020 and all that. And it would always be, like, this mystery and this really persistent, dogged detective, like, figured it out and got it right. But now there seems to be a bit of a shift in the last few years where we are more, you know, willing to tell stories about how often they get it wrong. And so I wanted to ask you, as somebody who, you know, comes from the world of media and film, and, like, what do you think is the place of, and by the way, it's not just that it's incredibly cool to have you as part of the Undisclosed team, but yeah, it was important to us that you would be able to bring a level of awareness that the rest of us couldn't, because of your obviously global, you know, reach and people knowing who you are. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the responsibility of media on these issues.
Well, there's a bunch of things happening at once. I mean, like, a show like Dateline is a thing called a format show. They want to tell a specific story every week, the same specific story. It's that same, it's the dogged investigator, it has the twist at the same place, and then, you know, the bad guy gets it at the end. That is the show they want to make. They don't want to make stories that are open-ended and sloppy and reflect reality, because people don't watch TV for reality. They watch TV to feel good about things. I loved Law & Order. I was like, wow, New York must be a perfect place now, because they've got everybody who ever did anything wrong. You know, and so I believe what's happening is a few things converging. I think we're getting the democratization of information, because court documents are more and more being available online. So people can see the source documents. They can see what was actually said, and they can see the actual crime scene photos, and they can make their own judgments based on that. And that is allowing people to see that very often what we used to trust journalists to do, and we still do to a great extent, to convey that information to us, we can now get it ourselves and make our own decisions and make our own judgments from it. So people are starting to see that the story that they used to get from people trying to sell them a story that ended well isn't the whole story. So I think that's definitely a part of it. And I think people are just thankfully, because of Netflix, and people are willing to watch stories that are a lot sloppier now, that aren't as constrained by time. You know, when you were making a network show, you had an hour, which was actually 43 minutes with commercials, and you had to fit all the acts in that, and you had to use the regular dramatic structure, and, you know, your stories all had to fit in that. But now, scripted television is just exploding in terms of what they can do, because they know viewers will stick with all kinds of different stories now.
I'll be honest, Serial was the first podcast I ever listened to. Did you already listen to, like, podcasts before Serial?
No, I had never listened to it. And it was great because my wife actually introduced me to Serial, and we listened to it like an old-time radio show. And again, that show was beautifully produced, and I was actually a huge fan of the second season as well. I know it was controversial, but that is kind of a magazine show. You know, they weren't expecting to write the whole story in their podcast. It's like I said, it's like a magazine. You're getting an excerpt. You're getting a slice of the story. And they do it beautifully.
Oh, I mean, they set the standard. I mean, I don't think any podcast has yet broken their record. And I, at this point, don't know if they actually will, even though we're seeing, like, what's amazing is in the last 6 months, there's so many new podcasts that are popping up from England to Australia to India, even, that are kind of the same thing, where it's like, a podcast is produced to talk about a wrongful conviction or a potential unsolved mystery or something of that sort, because people can actually pay attention for long periods of time. Surprise. The story's good.
That came up earlier, and I wanted to mention that the interesting thing about podcasting in this format, what I'm finding as I'm working these cases and I'm proactively meeting this Smith County DA's office head on, is that no one knows what to do with us right now. And because of that, we're able to accomplish, I think, a lot more than traditional media would, because we're not constrained by, especially for me, not so much you guys, because you're lawyers and you have law licenses to worry about.
I don't care about my license, but anyway. Okay.
This is why you and I get along, Rabia.
Clear.
We're the rebels. I go down to Texas and I just go walking into the courthouse and I want to see these documents, and I can go in and make friends with the clerk. And at Aid's case, I have all the crime scene photos. I have all the exhibits. I have copies of everything. And I was able to sneak in and get all that stuff. I shouldn't say sneak, because they're open records, but I was able to slide in there and get those before they ever knew it hit them. And just last week, I was in the courthouse and I'm hearing the scuttlebutt from the DA's office. They're walking around saying, what do we do about this guy? He's exposing us. And this crowdsource, this open justice kind of movement that's happening with all of these podcasts, I think it's really making an impact. And I think we're going to see a real change and real reform as we move forward with it.
So, John, would you ever go down to Smith County with Bob and walk in a courthouse and lay down the law? Are you willing to do that?
Because they really want to hear that from Ducky.
I would give you what you wanted. I mean, documents.
I beat up Jimmy
meant.
Spader. I think of Bob as Batman and myself as Robin, his youthful ward who seems a little gay.
That's awesome. There is kind of a Justice League vibe. Like, we need, like, uniforms. We need costumes. There need to be action figures and everything to go along with that. But I would love to watch... I mean, I don't know. Maybe you can have your assistant, like, follow you with a video camera to have John go down with you as you're investigating. And see, John could do is just distract people as you do what you need to do.
He'll sign autographs while I sneak in and get the documents I need.
Yep.
Actually, celebrities are given a certain amount of magical powers. I'm not joking about this.
It's true.
People let you go places you shouldn't be allowed to go. They give you all kinds of weird deference. And obviously, sometimes it's fun, and obviously it can be abused terribly. But it would be interesting. I would love to go down. It's not like everybody down there is horrible. There's a system that is crushing people right now because of the actions of a few. And I don't think the people of Tyler, Texas, want injustice to be going on. I think they want what's right for everybody. They want justice.
Well, that's what's been really cool about this is over the past several months, one of the most interesting effects of this is I finally breached into the local population to where I'm meeting people each time I go and they're telling someone else and telling someone else. So all of a sudden now I like have this network of people that are helping me. In all honesty, when I go down to Tyler, I take my gun with me for protection. But that's something that is tricky to deal with on an airplane. Well, I have people in Tyler that I actually bought another one and I store it in their house in their gun cabinet.
You know, I'm not going to try that personally next time I go to... I don't think I'm going to try the gun on the airplane.
well, especially like this last trip, I was out in some pretty sketchy places and was trying to track down an interview couple of the people who are the prime suspects of who I believe actually committed the murder. So it was a little, it was a little hairy. As a matter of fact, I was during this trip, I met Ed's new attorney. Her name's Allison Clayton, and she's with the Innocence Project of Texas. And she was spending 3 days with me to overview the case and wanted to go along with me in some of the things I was doing. And as she put it, I think you almost got me involved in a drive-by.
Wow.
There was a plan and she was the getaway driver and the rental car was a truck and we had it all planned out that I told her, if you hear shots and I don't come, take off and go get help. If you hear shots and I'm coming in hot, I'm jumping into the bed of the truck and you peel out.
That sounds really appealing, doesn't it, John? I'm sure you want to get right.
Oh, yes.
You still want to come, Robin?
Sure, Batman.
Well, I'll say, you know, the case that we're investigating now is a really small town, rural town. I mean, I grew up in small town America, but I haven't lived in small town America in a long time. And when I grew up, I didn't wear a scarf. And so people could look at me and they're like, oh, maybe she's Spanish. They had no idea. Like, they couldn't identify me and things were very different. But now, in our trip there, poor Susan the entire time was just like stressed out because she thought people were going to be really ignorant. And honestly, people were lovely. They were great to me. They were very polite. I definitely was the one person in the entire maybe tri-state, I don't know, or tri-town region that looked very different than anybody else. But people were good. And, you know, when as you started speaking to people, just like you said, they know the stories, they know the systems, they know the people. And they know that it's these judges, it's these DAs, it's these cops, and they've been suffering it mm-hmm. for years.
Yeah, and that's exactly what's happened down there. That just it just keeps expanding all the people that are willing to help, because these towns are full of, and I'm sure it's the same in your case, the towns are full of good people. They know what's going on, but they've never had the ability to do anything about it. Part of the reason in Smith County is that the local media is tied in just as tightly with that DA, and they protect them. And so here comes an outside media source that is not affected and doesn't care what the district attorney's office wants the narrative to be. And everybody's getting really excited and being very helpful. Even I met the victim, Elnora's cousin, her name's Johnny, who lived right next door and is the one that found the body. You know, I went and talked to her, and I don't know if you've had that conversation yet in your new case, but that's an awkward conversation to have, because she was the cousin of the victim. She found the body, it was very traumatic, and she thinks that the right guy is in prison. And so I talked to her and I told her what I was doing, and that I believe that Ed may actually be innocent, and I'm trying to investigate the case. And it's taken a while, but I've built up a relationship with her to the point where when I was there last week, she invited me into her house. We sat on the couch. She talked to me. She actually walked me over to the trailer and let me walk through the crime scene. She wants what's right. If Ed is not the person that did it, she said, then she wants to do anything she can do to help to find the real killer, which is pretty incredible, because that's a hard position to take, I think, yeah, for a family member of the victim.
Well, I mean, I think that's a testament to like your commitment and you connect really well with people. And I think they know that you're authentic there and you're not there to sensationalize things. You're really there to help fix things. Carrie Max Cook right now, is there a call to action? I know there's some crazy stuff going on. How can we, you know, I follow him online and I can sense that he really needs a lot of support right now. So what can our listeners do? What can we do to help support him?
Okay, I'll give you a quick Reader's Digest version of what's happening. So his lawyers had made the deal with the prosecutors to set his conviction aside, along with to do away with all of the prosecutorial misconduct grounds in his claim, and left only the actual innocence. And Carrie signed off on that, and he was okay with that. Well, about 2 days later, Carrie kind of, I don't want to say he came unhinged, but he got to an emotional state after 40 years of this and realized that deal let the prosecutors off the hook for all their misconduct. You know, they were working towards, there was probably going to be a handshake at the June 29th, the final hearing, for him to be fully exonerated, for the charges to be dropped. But he just couldn't, he reached a point of emotions a couple days later where he couldn't bear it. And he kind of flipped out. He sent an email out to his attorneys who were with the Innocence Project and fired them and copied those emails all over the internet. And I stood behind and I stand behind Carrie in what he did. And as I said, I didn't think it was the best move, but he cared less about the exoneration than he did about making these people accountable for what they had done. But that was, it was a pretty complex situation. I'm sure you heard in my voice in the episode last week.
Yeah.
It was tough because there was no really right or wrong answer. I mean, you had the Innocence Project that had negotiated a deal that was finally going to get him exonerated. And you had the prosecutor, who's I'm not a fan of, but in this case actually was willing to work with them and was willing to make that deal. And of course, they wanted something in return. You know, he wanted to protect Smith County because there was a lot of old skeletons that were going to come out and be exposed. So I had all these different angles, but then you had Carrie, who was perfectly justifiable that he was horribly upset about this. I mean, nobody can imagine what it would be like to go through what he went through.
Right. I don't think any of us, yeah, none of us are in a position to really judge like the actions mm-hmm. he took. Nobody has any idea how he's endured right. all this. Yeah.
Right. And so I hadn't put out a call to action because I didn't know what to do. And I've been in constant communication with Carrie since then. And we talk a couple times a day. And without having a lawyer right now, he just kind of feels alone. So we've become friends over the months. So we've talked quite a bit. And as the emotions have come down, this bonus episode that for those of you listening here want to go back and hear it, it's bonus number 5 with Kerry Cook. But he's had a change of heart at this point, and not really a change of heart. He's just kind of – he got past that emotional hump, and he wants to continue. He doesn't have his lawyers anymore. He actually has another lawyer that has agreed to take his case. The Innocence Project lawyers, they've made up. Kerry's apologized for kind of how he publicly treated them. They've apologized to him. Everything's good there, and they're working with the transition of the new lawyers. But what he wanted to get out last night when he came on my show was – that he has no ill will towards the Innocence Project and that they were doing what they do, which was working for the exoneration. And it was an emotional state. So right now, I guess the short answer to your question is the call to action for Kerry is to support Kerry, tweet about him, get on Facebook, anything you can do, tell everyone and just show your support in a positive way. He had a very negative moment, but what he wants is positivity, that we're working towards doing something right. And then from my perspective and his at this point, what we've kind of came to the conclusion of is what we've really wanted is reform in Smith County. And there's two ways of getting that. It's to beat it down into submission or to try to work with them and guide them into reform. And we don't know what's really going to happen right now. But at this June 29th hearing, I think we'll see with whatever Matt Bingham does that this could be the first step to guiding that district attorney's office into true reform. If they're willing to actually look at an innocent man and work with him to get him exonerated.
Maybe so look at themselves in the mirror too.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, and so it's hard to, because I was just like curious, like I want him to pay for all this crap they did to him and to my other cases, but we can't take our eyes off the prize, which is to make a change. And that's what we're working towards.
Well, I'm going to give this one more shot. John, is there any, I mean, you're going to be working with us and we're going to start taping soon. And I'm really excited. And I think on the first addendum, Susan Call and I will all three of us will be with you. Whereas in future episodes, I think we're just maybe it'll be a different panels every week. But you're also doing some work with Bob. Is all of it completely under wraps or is there any little teasers you can give our listeners?
It's all under wraps at this point. I don't want to ruin it.
It'll be great whenever we find. At what point do you think we'll know?
You know what? It is impossible to foretell at this point.
No. It's look, I know how it is. I know how these things go. We're just, I'm excited to see like what you guys do because I really feel like, first of all, John, it's amazing that you are putting yourself out there. You know, one of my things with Sarah Koenig was I could tell that she very carefully was guarding her professional reputation not to put herself on the line for somebody, you know, until she got like a smoking gun. And for you to do that in a case like Adnan's and a lot of these cases where, you know what, it feels like you know this person, like, but you still don't have that smoking gun. It says a lot. And I appreciate it so very much. And I hope you're able to help Bob turn Smith County on their head.
Well, I hope so, too, for a lot of people's sake.
If you go to Bob's website, you'll see that the episodes are numbered not quite in order. So why don't you explain that so people can know how to find what they're looking for?
Okay. Yeah. So my podcast continues on. You know, I don't have any breaks. I go every week. And it's become dynamic to where I'm working one case, but whatever comes up, if another case comes up or it branches into another one, we go ahead and do that. We take it on and we go week by week with that. So in order to try to keep some symbiance there and for people to understand, to be able to easily track which case they're on, I have a 3-digit numbering system. So if you subscribe to Truth and Justice on iTunes or Google Play or go to the website, any episode that starts with a 1, the 100 series are all about Adnan's case. And then the 200 series are all the Smith County cases. And I think as of right now, there's 22 of them. And I want to kind of forewarn people that, you know, if they want to get into the Smith County case, which I really hope people do, I just want to get as much support as possible. We have a lot, but the more the better to try to make change there. Start with episode 201 and you're going to hear me kind of fumbling through for a couple of episodes because since I do this for a living, I have to put a show on every week. I can't take a break and research and be ready. So you're literally going through this case in real time with me. So you'll hear me introduce the Kenny Snow case. I'll start working that. You'll walk through with me through the 200 series, the shift from the Kenny Snow case into the Edward H. case. And then the Edward H. case, once that picks up, because we have so much information on that one, it gets very detailed. Every episode we're breaking down. The crime scene photos are on the website. The documents are on the website. And it's very organized once you get to, you know, about episode 210 when we get into that. And then the Kerry Max Cooks are still in the 200s because they're still Smith County and they're all kind of interconnected. And then there was there's a couple of 300 series that were is a short case. Something just came up spur of the moment that you'll see those there too. So, and as we go forward, the next case that we pick up, I've already got one in mind. Once, if I ever get out of Smith County, will be the 400s and so on and so forth.
Well, my advice to listeners is to listen to all of it.
Yeah, it is a complicated case, but the layers really pay off and it paints an incredible picture.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, instructive to watch. Actually, just to do exactly what you're saying, Bob, is to watch you do this in real time, unravel things in real time. It's kind of exhilarating, but it's also, I don't know, it's kind of depressing sometimes too, as you unravel different things and see the connections and you're like, wow, this thing goes back deep. These people, you know, the same people keep popping up in these different cases, and it can be a little disturbing. But anyhow, thank you guys both again for joining us this week on Undisclosed. I can't wait for season two launch, and I can't wait to see what you guys do together.
Well, thank you, Rabia.
And I cannot wait for the season two launch, too. I've been waiting for you guys. What's keeping you?
You know, I don't know what's happening in season two either, so it's going to be news to me, too.
We have given John a little bit of an overview of the case, and he's going to be like most of our audience, and he's going to hear week by week, you know, what else we've uncovered and listen to the story unfold. So I think he's going to be an amazing voice and guide for everybody to walk through the case.
Well, that sounds great. And thank you so much, Robbie, for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Totally my honor. Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Undisclosed this week, folks. If you haven't already, and being an Undisclosed fan, you probably have, make sure you give Bob a listen at the Truth and Justice podcast. And if you like John Cryer, well, what am I saying? Of course you like John Cryer. It's John freaking Cryer. Don't forget to catch the Undisclosed Addendum premiering on July 14th that he's hosting. He'll be asking questions of your Undisclosed hosts, reading your tweets, and just generally continuing to be awesome at life as John Cryer on our podcast. Credit to both John and Bob for recording with us this week. Thanks again to Great Courses for being a great sponsor. Our sponsors really do keep this train running, so make sure you go to www.thegreatcoursesplus.com/undisclosed and get yourself some education. We'll send our usual love to Ramiro Marquez for theme music and photography, Christy Williams for both our current website and his help updating our new site. Stay tuned for that. And to Baluki for our logo. Rebecca Lavoie continues to do amazing work in audio production for us on behalf of Partners in Crime Media. She got some additional production help this week by the wonderful Miss Hannah McCarthy. In the wee twilight hours of the night, because Rebecca's super busy crushing every other aspect of her life during the day, Rebecca hosts and produces the great podcast, Crime Writers On. And it is great. I know, because I listen religiously. And Rebecca knows this. So, I actually feel a bit bad that we're asking you all to wait 14 more days before the new season. It's a long time to go, right? But you've been patient so far. What's 2 weeks? You could fill your idle time between now and then by contacting us on social media. We do Facebook, we do Twitter. Our handle there is UndisclosedPod. Contact us, talk to us, social media us. We'll try to social media you back. Not sure that's a verb, but if it wasn't before, I just made it one. Hashtagging. Hashtagging is a verb, right? Use the hashtag undisclosed. And make up some verbs. I did. And I think that's part of an executive producer's job description. I'm Dennis Robinson, and we will see you on July 11th for the Undisclosed Season 2 premiere.